From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. And this morning we speak first with longtime pediatric dietitian Jill Castle, who joins the show to discuss her new book, Kids Thrive at Every Size, How to Nourish Your Big, Small, or In-Between Child for a Lifetime of Health and Happiness.
And then we speak with local physical therapist and concussion expert Annie Howard of Happy Brain Physical Therapy. Annie joins us to give some important updates on the treatment of concussion. For example, it's never too late to treat concussion. Stay tuned to hear more. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters. Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
Whenever a parent opens Instagram or scans a parenting story, they're overwhelmed, or they can be, with panic and guilt-inducing messages around how to raise a happy and healthy child, especially when it comes to nutrition. So what does a healthy child look like, and how can parents actually raise one, especially in a world of conflicting advice, societal pressure, and access to too much information? Well, joining us now is Jill Castle. She is a pediatric dietitian and childhood nutritionist with over 30 years of experience. She's also the founder of something called The Nourished Child. It's a parent-focused website, and she's also the voice behind the popular podcast of the same name, The Nourished Child. She's joining us now to discuss her new book. It's called Kids Thrive at Every Size, How to Nourish Your Big, Small, or In-Between Child for a Lifetime of Health and Happiness. Jill Castle, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is a really interesting topic, I think. And what it made me think of is how children are different than adults. Children have these growth spurts, and sometimes they have, you know, they can be a little chubby, or sometimes they're a little smaller, you know, big, small, depending on sort of where they are with their age, or what is that? What creates that sort of uneven growth spurt thing that happens?
That's a great question. Well, we know in the early years of life, there's a lot of brain growth happening, and there's a lot of fat padding on young infants and toddlers, and that really helps their brain grow. And so we do have infant growth spurts, and then we enter into a phase where children lean out in toddlerhood. And oftentimes that's the time when parents start to get a little panicked, because their child looks like they're losing weight. They oftentimes are not. They're just stretching out and getting rid of some of that baby fat. Adolescence is another time during puberty where there's accelerated growth. And the body, particularly in girls, will lay down more body fat in the middle section in preparation for menstruation or starting their period. And so we have these very predictable adjustments in growth and development and body fat over time. Our culture today has a very narrow view of what a healthy body should look like. And that oftentimes makes parents feel inadequate and nervous about what is happening with their child's developing body.
So as parents, you know, it's hard to just say this too shall pass, but at what point should we start to have some questions? And at what point should we just say that this is just a normal part of growth?
I think that your medical team, your pediatrician can be very helpful in that process. We do have growth charts that we look at, and there's a lot of problems with growth charts because they are one point in time. However, if we look at a growth chart as a tracking device, we can use it to really see how our child is evolving over time. And when things get off track, it really is a call for parents to step back and say, what are the habits that are established here? What do we know about our child's eating? What do we know about the food that we're serving? What do we know about sleep behaviors, movement? These are all habits that every child of every size needs, but can get off track, particularly when there's families that are busier, that kids who are highly programmed with activities, that can create chaos in a family. And that can, when that happens, you know, food and feeding and screen time and sleep can all get off track. And so for me, as a pediatric dietitian, I really want to encourage parents to just not panic, but just take a step back and look at what are all the things that are going on. It's never just one thing. It's never just food. Oh my gosh, food is off track. It's oftentimes several things that are getting a little off track, and we need to just take stock and reset or reframe some of the habits that are going on in the family.
I always think about those first few months when you bring your child home from the hospital and you're bringing them in for their weekly checks. And it seems like their weight and their growth charts are such an important indicator of how they're thriving or not. So we become really attuned to, is my child growing? Are they normal? Are they in the range? But then, you know, they start to diverge. At what point do you think kids start to just ease into their natural body type, or that we can start feeling okay with a little divergent from the charts?
So I think after the toddlerhood phase, where children start to lean out, they start to grow into their natural sort of shape and size. And you can see that on the growth chart. You hear parents all the time say, my child's always been on the larger side of the growth chart. My child's always been on the smaller side. My first daughter was always on the smaller side. So I did not fret that she was on the smaller side. I was, as a parent and as a dietitian, always looking to make sure she was growing along her channel. And when we look at those growth curves, if you do have a larger child, a larger bodied child, a larger framed child, you will see that that child consistently grows along their channel. And there is nothing to worry about in that instance. It's when we see children who have been growing at a certain channel and all of a sudden they tick up and they jump a couple of channels, then we are looking at a different situation. We are looking at this is when we pull back and we say, what's going on here, and pair up with our medical support team and really look at what is happening.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So that, yeah, just are they following the trend or have they jumped the track a little bit? That's really, really helpful. Exactly. I know my brother, I have a really tall younger brother, and my mom jokes that he was 35 pounds from when he was like 3 all the way till he was 7, because he just stretched out instead of growing altogether. And now he's 6'6" and a very healthy man. Yeah. Yeah. I love the fact that we are so, as also when our kids are little, we're the ones controlling their food intake when they're really little, right? And I remember asking Dr. Leslie Webster, our wonderful pediatrician, my kid only wants to eat carbs. Like, I can't seem to get them to eat protein. And she was always very reassuring, you know, that kids they're eating what they need to eat. But are there any new things that we should be knowing about what we should be feeding our very young children?
I think our society and sort of our culture has sort of gravitated towards younger children being exposed more and more to sweets and treats at an earlier and earlier age. I don't have a problem with sweets and treats, but for me as a pediatric dietitian, when I am looking at young children, particularly infants and young toddlers, I know how much brain growth is going on. I know how much real estate these toddlers have in their tummies. It's not a lot. Their tummies are tiny. Their nutrient needs are incredibly high. And so I get discouraged when I see toddlers walking around with, you know, sugar sweetened beverages and eating lots of sugary foods, because I know that they're probably short circuiting some of those very important nutrients they need for brain development, bone development, their immune system development. And so I think that parents, yes, they are in control. I think the other side of the coin is, as you mentioned earlier, parents get a lot of support in that first year of life. They're seeing the pediatrician a lot. They're tracking. They get their questions answered. But after a child turns two, we move into annual visits, and parents are really navigating food and nutrition and habits. They're doing this on their own. And it's really hard. It's really hard to know what is the proper balance of food for a young toddler? How does that change as children get older? What are the demands of growth and development at these early ages? And how does nutrition play a role in that? So I have a heart for parents, and that's why I've dedicated my career to educating, because I know, and I experienced it myself, you're out there on your own trying to navigate all this information that you're getting bombarded with on social media and trying to sort it out and make sense, not only just in general, but to apply it to your context, your current family demands, the things you have access to, the things you can afford. How do you make all this make sense? It's not easy.
I'm wondering if we seem to have such an unhealthy obsession with our weight, and as a country with probably a higher percentage of obese people, and certainly a culture in which we love our fast, quick solutions that are oftentimes very, processed food that's not good for us. Is there a reframe that we can do for our kids to go away from this whole notion of weight and more? Like, I love when you said when they have fat, it's for their brain development, or other stages, it's that their bodies are needing something else, or their brains are needing something else. How do we reframe?
That's a great question. I think that, kids are getting the message today that what they look like is the most important thing that is about them. And that's so not true, right? Kids have so many interesting things about them, and what they look like does not reflect what their health status is. And so one of the reframes I think we need to do is to embrace this idea that kids really can be healthy at every size. Their size does not dictate their health. And by looking at a child, you have no idea what's going on inside their bodies. We have thin children with lots of health problems. We have larger bodied children with no health problems. And so to just carte blanche say, oh, what you look like tells me how healthy or how not healthy you are, we need to reframe that. I also believe that we put a lot of emphasis on food. We get very binary about food. It's either healthy or it's not healthy. And the truth is, there's a lot of room for flexibility around food. And when we are helping children learn about all types of food, enjoy all types of food, we need to be, as adults, more neutral about food, because these binaries that we put on food, kids start to embody these. I'm eating unhealthy food. Well, that child may not have any other choice but to bring, packaged, processed food items to school, because that's what their family can access and afford. Mm-hmm. But when we start to say, you're bad because you like or you eat unhealthy foods, that child can internalize that and start to feel badly about themselves, feel badly about who they are. And that, when you start to not feel worthy around who you are as a person and the behaviors that you participate in, it kills motivation to take care of the body that you have. And so we need to be thinking about how we are talking about food and health and bodies and keeping it more neutral and more flexible. I mean, the body is an amazing thing. It can tolerate an unhealthy meal and be just fine. But when we are, when I think about parents and I think about this difficult job of navigating nutrition and health habits, I want them to feel empowered to be able to take back control of how they are cultivating these habits and attitudes in their children. And I want them to feel like you don't have to have an A+ on food. There are so many other things you can work on that really can help you cultivate a child who is physically healthy, but also emotionally well.
Oh, so important. It's funny, as you were talking, it just jogged this memory I have from a very early age. And it's about talking about the positive things that you eat instead of saying things are bad. I must have been at like 4 or 5 years old, and my mom said to me, "Oh, Linny's my little salad eater." And at that point, I just remember this feeling of pride that I got about being my mom's little salad eater. And to this day, it's like 80% of what I eat.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah, no. And I bet you each and every person who's listening to this show, and I know for myself, I have my own memories of what was said to me as a child. We carry these things forward. And that's why I feel that it's so important to really step back and think about how are we talking about these things? How are we educating children about food and health and bodies? I mean, I have talked to educators before, and it is so important in our school system that we have neutrality around bodies and health and be factual and not laying these moral virtuistic labels on food and health and bodies, because children internalize these things. They carry them forward, positive things, but more often than not, the negative things. You're right. A big eater. You never eat enough. You're so picky. Right? And when we say these things to kids, they believe those things about themselves. And then they start to erode their worthiness, their self-esteem, their sense of self. And in doing so, like I mentioned before, we're not encouraging them or motivating them or empowering them to take care of these bodies that they have that are wonderful things. Everybody has a body and we only get one. And so helping children develop those lifestyle behaviors and positive attitudes about themselves, their bodies, and how to take care of them is really important.
It is. And I do think the kids today are a lot more informed than they used to be. One day recently, I was trying to get my 11-year-old to eat something. And he just looks me dead in the eye. "Mom, I have like a billion more bitter receptors in my tongue than you do. So I'm going to taste it differently." And I was like, "Well, yes, okay." And he was like, "And besides, I need to try it 6 times before I might know if I like it or not." And I was like, "What are you reading? This is amazing."
So that is amazing.
we know that they're picking up a lot from the world around them, but I think so many of us parents still want to know how we can encourage our kids to eat healthier foods, when really the packaged stuff and the colored and the sweet and the salty stuff is just marketed to them so strongly. How can we get them to eat more of the healthy things we know that they should be eating?
Simply said, serve it.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of it is, you know, you can't control your child when they go outside of your home and make choices on their own, but you've got full control of your kitchen. You've got full control of what you serve. And, you know, it's all that flexible balance. We know we want children eating more fruits and vegetables. They don't eat enough fruits and vegetables. And it doesn't always have to be fresh. It can be frozen. It can be, you know, canned in low sugar syrup and all that stuff, but more fruits and vegetables. We want kids to eat more fruits and vegetables. We want them to eat more whole grains. Many kids are eating refined grains, you know, white bread versus whole wheat bread or white rice versus brown rice. We want them to do those things. We, as parents and caretakers, we need to bring those foods into the house. We need to incorporate them into our meals and into our snacks and really model what it looks like to live in an environment where there are nutritious foods around as the norm.
That makes a lot of sense. Make sure you have a not withering crummy looking vegetables, but things that are bright and tasty looking, nice fruit. I know that my younger son is really affected by what his older brother eats. So when he sees him eating good things, he's a little more, you know, willing to give it a shot. And so I think that peer effect on their eating is a big deal too. What if our kid is going through a period of maybe wanting to eat a limited amount or limited type of foods, when should we be worried? When should we just surf through it?
I think for the most part, most parents should just surf through it and keep plowing ahead with exposing their children to lots of different foods, flavors, cuisines, spices. You know, I always say to my patients and my clients that I've worked with, if you make food a big deal, food will be a big deal. Oh. And so, you know, keeping a very neutral attitude about food, knowing as a parent, your job is to offer, so, you know, and letting children sort of navigate through what you have offered to them, and really trying to strike a balance. You know, we know that a healthy plate, as I mentioned earlier, fruits and vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, dairy or your non-dairy substitutes, those are the core anchors of what a healthy plate looks like. And so always just keeping that in mind, and knowing that there is flexibility. You don't have to be perfect. Perfect is the enemy of motivation. And you don't have to be perfect. So be flexible. And if, you know, if it's pizza, add a salad or add a bowl of fruit. Try to always think about, you know, how can I capitalize on nutrients? How can I add to what we've got? Because it's not always going to be healthy, quote unquote healthy, right? And your definition of healthy and my definition of healthy and your listener's definition of healthy can all be very different, right? So it's a personal decision, and that is 100% okay. But how can you take what's going on and level up a little bit? I always say to my family, stick a bowl of fruit on the table. every meal, kids will eat it. Right? If it's out there in the front and they're hungry, they will eat it. And I'm not talking about kids with, you know, extreme picky eating or, you know, eating conditions that prohibit them from, you know, engaging in all these foods. But for the most part, most kids, if it's out there, it's available, the environment is positive, people are conversation is happening around the table, everybody's enjoying the presence of each other, and we're not hammering kids with, you should try that. And why aren't you eating another piece of this? If we can let that stuff go and make family time a positive place to be, that family table, a positive place to be, and just get food on the table. You don't have to overthink it. Just, you know, get it out there on the table and enjoy eating it and show your children how, you know, food is one of the greatest pleasures we have in life. So let's not demonize it and make it a big deal. Let's enjoy it and know that we have a lot of flexibility there.
So great. Well, the book is Kids Thrive at Every Size. And our guest is Jill Castle. She is a pediatric dietitian and childhood nutritionist. And one reason that our listeners should just get your book is because we haven't had the opportunity to talk about screen time and sleep as it relates to our bodies. And that is, can you just give a little primer, a little tease for our listeners on especially sleep?
Sure. So sleep. So in every pillar, there's 8 pillars of wellness. Sleep is number 2. It's a quick win for families, I believe. But in each pillar, I talk about the research behind why these pillars are so important for physical health and emotional well-being. And so for sleep, growth hormone, the hormone that promotes growth, is secreted when children are deeply in sleep. And so if you want your child to grow well, we want to make sure they get adequate sleep. And we also know that during sleep, that's when emotional regulation happens. Children sort out what happened to them during the day. They remember things and they, you know, they cement their learning. And so quality sleep, we call it sleep quality, not the number of hours necessarily that a child is asleep, is sleeping, but the quality of sleep when they're sleeping during that time. And so in that pillar, I really teach parents how to cultivate that habit and consider, you know, families that live in rural areas versus families that live in big cities and there's a lot of noise and light. Like, how do you make this work for every child? But sleep is so important, and it's a relatively easy habit to set up. Regular bedtime, regular wake time, very quiet, calm routines before bedtime. I talk about some of the foods you want to avoid before sleep so that your child can sleep. Obviously, things like caffeine is going to interrupt sleep. And then in terms of the screen time pillar, we really talk about the influence of screens from gaming devices to social media, and how children today are really bombarded with so many messages about their bodies, the foods that they are eating, and helping parents sort of rein that in. I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it, but how can you rein screens in and use them to help your child be healthy and well-adjusted, as opposed to having these devices take away our children's attention and interfere with sleep and interfere with being outside and moving our bodies. So how can we get our kids on a safe and healthy screen diet, if you will? I go through all of that, the research behind screen time, what are the obstacles to setting healthy guidelines in place, and then how to do it.
Excellent. Jill Castle, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life. And thanks for writing this book. It's great.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
In an active and sporty area like Park City and Summit and Wasatch counties, unfortunately, concussion is an all too frequent occurrence. And our next guest, concussion expert and physical therapist Annie Howard, will tell you that every concussion journey is unique and that it's never too early or too late to seek concussion treatment. It is Annie Howard's mission at Happy Brain PT to empower you to understand that if you're experiencing after effects from a head injury, what you feel is real and that there is a solution to get you back to doing the things that you love. Annie joins us to tell us more. Annie, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Let's start with just talking about what is the most common thing that brings people in to see you?
Well, I see people for a number of different reasons. People come very shortly after they or their child has had a concussion. Maybe they hit their head at a sporting event a day or two before, and they have headaches and they don't feel well, and they're concerned and they want education and they're just not really sure what to do. And then I see a lot of people who have had maybe one or multiple concussions over a longer period of time, and they are struggling and they get frequent headaches, they have brain fog, they maybe have dizziness, either when they stand up or when they lie down. They're realizing that it's affecting their lives, and maybe they've heard, you know, by talking to other people that there is something that they can do, or they've heard about me. So I do really see the whole gamut, but a huge piece is education and helping people to sort of understand why they're feeling what they're feeling, and then help them understand that there is something that they can do about it.
Oh, that sounds great. And how long has Happy Brain PT been a part of our community?
I opened Happy Brain Physical Therapy about a year and a half ago, so the beginning of 23. I've been a PT for many, many, many years and was commuting to Salt Lake for a long time, and then decided to open my own thing up here and join the community. And I've lived up here for many, many years.
It's a good place to live.
It is. It really is. And it's nice to own a business here and even feel like even a bigger part of the community.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're speaking with physical therapist and concussion expert Annie Howard. Her business in Park City is Happy Brain PT. I love the name of your business. And you know, it kind of It goes deeper than that, right? Because when you hear about a happy brain, and if your brain is not happy, it sort of drives home that there are solutions. There are things we could do. One of the things you say is it's never too late to treat concussion. How many people do you see that don't actually realize that they had a concussion, but then they're having these weird symptoms and they come in maybe months later?
Yeah, I've seen quite a few, or I've had a couple of people who have brought in a child, and while I'm talking to the child and asking them the questions, the lights are going off in their head and saying, oh my gosh, you know, many, many years ago, I maybe hit my head, or I was in a car accident, or something happened and I have all of these things. Can you help me too?
Well, that's really interesting. And of course, for Mary Beth and I, I'm sure we're sitting here going,
one of my many symptoms are related to many head bumps. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, what are those symptoms that make the light go on for the parent that they may not have ever thought of before?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of things are things that maybe we just sort of tolerate or kind of just chalk off to something else. I mean, certainly headaches. Many of us get headaches, and there are many causes of headaches. Concussion certainly is not the only cause of headaches. But certainly if you've had concussions and you get frequent headaches, there is a connection there. And then headaches can also come from many things. They can come from the neck. They can come from your autonomic nervous system. And then a lot of people have dizziness. So either dizziness when they lay down or they sit up, they sort of feel that vertigo, that spinning feeling, or a dizziness that's more of a lightheadedness. So they stand up and you sort of feel that feeling that we've all had, right? Where you stand up too quickly and you're like, whoa, maybe I didn't drink enough water today. So those are two of the big ones. I mean, a lot of people have brain fog, which of course can come from many different things. And all of us with aging, I think we start to feel the brain fog. There are many different things. Reading can become troublesome. You know, people start to notice like my eyes don't feel right, or I get a headache with reading, or I have eye pain. And that is a common thing with kids who often don't tell their parents, or they don't even realize that it's not normal. I mean, how many of us as a kid needed glasses and didn't even know that what the chalkboard was supposed to look like? You know, when you're sitting in the back, oh, it's supposed to be blurry. And then you put on glasses and you realize that it's clear. So that is a common thing, that kids sort of get headaches on and off throughout the school day, or they start to feel eye pain, or they stop wanting to read because it just feels uncomfortable. So those are some of the big ones, but there are many, many things that people feel after concussion.
A few weeks ago, we spoke with Dr. Theodore Schwartz about brain surgery and the kind of things that can happen that require brain surgery. And that left me terrified that, you know, if I ever get a headache, that I need to go in for an MRI immediately. But what is there a dividing line between, you know, how long you should wait, or an indicator that tells you when this might be something that you should get checked out sooner than later?
So you mean for concussion?
For concussion, yes.
Yeah, so if you hit your head, you know, we all play sports and we all do things and we bang our head here and there. There are immediate signs that we call red flags, which are things like seizures, or one pupil is bigger than the other, or, you know, intractable vomiting, or a headache that just persists and persists. Confusion, slurred speech, those are things that immediately you should go to the emergency room, because what you want to look for there is to make sure that you don't have a brain bleed. But when we talk about concussion, concussion is a functional injury and it actually can't be seen on imaging. So what happens is the little neurons, which are the little cells in our brains that send messages to our brain and our body, get stretched and sheared, and they sort of go into this energy crisis. Our neurons release our body releases a bunch of chemicals, and it causes a decrease in blood flow and this energy crisis. So we're using up all of our energy and we're not able to create more. So in terms of going to a doctor, going to a physical therapist, you know, if you've hit your head and it's been maybe more than 2 to 3 days and you're still not feeling well, that's a good time to go in and see a physical therapist and start to get treatment. Because the earlier that you can treat it, the better. It doesn't mean that if you've had these symptoms for years and years that you can't treat them as well. But certainly the sooner you address them, the easier it is and the faster it is to resolve those symptoms.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. I don't think I had realized that concussion isn't something that you see on a scan, that it is more of a functional, symptom-driven diagnosis. What would be, like you say, you can get treatment. So what do the beginning stages of treatment look like?
Yeah, so the American Physical Therapy Association divides treating concussion into four areas. So the four areas are treating the neck, treating the vision and vestibular system. So the vestibular system is a teeny tiny organ between our ears that helps us to calibrate balance and helps our eyes to stay stable with a moving head or moving target. If you think of, if you've ever been sitting in your car at a traffic light and the light's red and the car next to you moves and you think it's you and your stomach drops, that's your vestibular system. So there can be this mismatch between your eyes and your vestibular system and how you're perceiving motion. Your autonomic nervous system, which is the system in our body that controls all of the things that we don't think about. So think about blood flowing, temperature regulating, breathing, all of those kinds of things, hormone regulation, and then complex motor cognitive dual tasking. So a concussion physical therapy exam, first week, you know, I ask about all the different symptoms and sort of tried to tease out which system of those four things is causing your symptoms. So the idea is to treat the system in the body that isn't working properly to then get your body to not feel the symptoms that you're feeling.
Annie, I'm wondering, is it important to find out as you assess someone who thinks they may have a concussion, which area of the brain it has affected? And does that kind of determine how you go to assess it? I mean, does it matter if we have a brain injury, we have a brain injury, or do we need to know if it's on the left or the right, the front or the back?
So yes and no. So if it's a more severe traumatic brain injury, that's going to show up on imaging. And so you're going to start to see that there was damage to a different area of the brain. Through, you know, a subjective assessment, we want to ask questions sort of that help to determine sort of what is going on overall. So in some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. I mean, if somebody had, for example, a temporal bone fracture, with temporal bone fractures, there's a 100% chance that there's vestibular dysfunction. So knowing sort of if somebody had that area is going to help to say like, okay, I think a lot, either all or a lot of your dizziness is coming from that area, but a lot of the symptoms are really coming from multiple systems. So you might have that temporal bone fracture and have a lot of the dizziness that's associated with that, but then you might also have a little bit of dizziness that's coming from a blood flow restriction, so that autonomic nervous system, or maybe as a result of having dizziness, now you haven't moved your head a lot because it feels really uncomfortable. So if something's uncomfortable, we're just naturally not going to do it. So now the neck has stiffened up and that can also cause dizziness. So really what we're trying to do is just sort of tease out what is coming from where.
Okay. Now there is a very interesting change in protocol for concussion. My son, who's now 26, it was probably 12 years ago, he had a really significant concussion and he stayed in a dark room for at least 3 weeks. He couldn't even handle if there was a crack of light coming through the curtain. And at that point, the protocol was, yes, lots of rest, keeping you in a dark space, but that's not so anymore. What's the new protocol and why did they move away from that?
Yeah, so sort of moved away from the whole idea of what they call cocooning, which is staying in the dark room, limiting exposure to all stimuli. And the reason is that they showed that it actually made you more sensitive. So if you think about if you're in the movie theater in the middle of the day and then you come outside and there are those bright lights, you're limiting yourself to the exposure. So what we want to try to do is have limited bits of exposure. Rest is sort of this vague word. So we call it relative rest, right? So maybe resting from don't go out skiing the next day. And sleep is really good. There was a time when we thought that sleeping, like you should wake somebody every hour. Sleep is really good unless somebody can't be awakened. And that's another one of those red flags, but your brain actually heals best when it sleeps. So the current management for, in particular, the first few days after a concussion is to sleep as much as you feel like you need to put really good things in your body. So eating whole foods, real foods, and increasing your protein intake. Because if you think about that energy crisis, you're using up all of your energy and you're not able to create more. So we want to increase protein. And then small bits of exposure. So little bits of light, go out for just like a very gentle walk or go sit outside. You know, if you need sunglasses outside, that's okay. But removing sunglasses indoors and gently starting to increase that exposure, because what tends to happen is if you don't, then it's really, really hard to then go back to, you know, quote unquote, the real world where there are bright lights and where you are outside and where you do need to have your lights turned up in your house. And then another thing is screens. There's a lot of debate over like take away screens altogether. So the current guidelines state that little bits as well, especially like for kids who get a lot of their social interactions with their friends, completely removing that has been shown also to be detrimental. So, but little bits at a time, think, you know, 20 minutes at a time, and then put it aside for a few hours.
I found it wonderful to hear that you can address old injuries, that it's not just recent acute injuries. A couple of years ago, I tripped over a computer cord and just smacked my head. I just fell flat on the carpet, but I was seeing double for the whole evening and I'd never really had an injury like that. It freaked me out a bit. And I don't think I have any, you know, lasting things, except my neck goes crack, 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 crack once in a while. And I see chiropractic care and that helps a lot. But how do you approach an older injury versus something that's been more recent?
So in many ways, it's the same. So we're going to kind of go through all of the questions and sort of start to tease out sort of what the symptoms are. And then really what we're looking for is what are the drivers? So what is driving the headaches? What is driving maybe the lightheadedness or the memory changes or all of those kinds of things?
And I saw on your site, the Happy Brain PT site, that you actually have an online program. So is this something people can work on wherever they are?
Yeah. So recently I developed an online treatment program that people can do anywhere, and it's self-paced. So the idea being that I'm here in Park City, but I want people everywhere to be able to get good care. So what it consists of is 5 chapters about understanding why you feel the way you do. So I go through each of the systems and sort of explain the visual system and the vestibular system and the autonomic nervous system. And then there are 4 chapters on management strategies. So things like nutrition, pacing your day so that you don't try to get all of your work done and then all of a sudden you just completely crash and can't do anything for the rest of the day, and the importance of sleep. And then there is a 14-day step-by-step program where I take you through exercises to actually treat the underlying systems that are giving you symptoms.
That's so interesting that you can actually do exercises to help you recover from an injury like that. That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, when you say the underlying systems, what do you mean?
Okay, so we talked about sort of the 4 domains. So we have the neck, the visual and vestibular system, that autonomic nervous system, and then the complex cognitive thinking system. And so the exercises are addressing each of those systems. So if you're having trouble with your autonomic nervous system, for example, the best thing that you can do is exercise. So also, going to a couple questions back, exercise is a big thing. So things that you can do right after concussion are getting exercise. And that, again, is a very loose term, right? We live in a place where exercise can mean many different things, but just getting movement. So getting blood flowing is really good. Gentle walks, anything that increases your symptoms, you want to back off from. And so that sort of goes into treating the autonomic nervous system, which is treated with exercise, but there are very specific ways to treat it. A lot of people will say that after a concussion, they, you know, go out for a jog and all of a sudden their symptoms get worse. They get a really bad headache. That is because there is a problem with your body's ability to increase your heart rate and you are getting symptomatic. So there is a way to treat it. It's just a very specific way. And so that's one of the many things that we do in physical therapy is sort of starting to treat it. And one of the big things is a very specific form of high intensity interval.
Wow, really? Huh. That's very interesting. As the protocols change and as treatments sort of update, I guess, and supersede earlier treatments, it seems to me, and I've heard this a lot in the concussion world, that there are people who may not be specific concussion experts trying to treat concussion. And in the case of, I have a good friend of mine, I think we've talked about this before, who had a really severe TBI and then was treated too early with the wrong types of protocols. And it made her go backwards. And then she just never went back to physical therapy. And therefore her symptoms just endured. And it was very sad to see. So, I mean, I know we don't want to out anyone or make anyone wrong, but talk a little bit about how to tell if you're getting the right treatment.
Yeah, it can be difficult. If you're somebody who's seeking out concussion treatment, I would look for somebody who has done a lot of continuing education and really specializes in concussion. And you can ask questions just sort of about what their approach is. The recommendations for medication, particularly early on, are that there isn't a lot of medication. Ibuprofen within the first few days is completely contraindicated. So staying away from that, and then staying away from oral steroids or sleeping medications, particularly in children. Those are things that as time progresses, and if you're really not improving, that they can be helpful to help you go about your day. But certainly there was, I believe in 2005, a study that with oral steroids that showed that they actually, when given after concussion, there was no benefit and they actually created more problems. So those are some of the things to avoid. It can be tough. I think probably with any injury, it's hard to know if I'm not getting better, is it because I haven't been matched up correctly or, you know, what are the reasons? So I guess I want to encourage people that if they are having issues like that, or they have setbacks that are not just a small bump in the road, or they're not getting better, that that there is something that can be done and maybe seeking help elsewhere.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we are wrapping up with Annie Howard, who has a wonderful resource in town called Happy Brain PT, where you can check out your symptoms and figure out if there's an appropriate protocol for you. If you've had some concussion after effects, maybe we could wrap up by asking you if you've had a brain injury or a concussion in the past. I know sometimes it can be you could be more likely to get another one because of different effects. How can we protect ourselves from needing to come see you in the first place?
I know, right? We can all wrap ourselves in bubble wrap. No, I'm just kidding. Some things that you can do are, you know, just keeping your brain healthy. And in particular, if you've had a concussion, really good nutrition, supplements like fish oil and vitamin D help to strengthen our brain. And really just taking care of it. If you do have a small one, rehabbing, even just a couple of sessions to sort of get back to 100% of your normal so that your brain is stronger. And then if something happens, it feel those effects as much. But yeah, it has been shown that, you know, each time it can be a little bit worse and a little bit worse, unfortunately.
Sure. So where can people find you?
You can find me online at www.happybrainpt.com. And I also have an office in Pine Brook right next to the Park City Day School.
Well, that's where I live. So I will keep an eye out for you.
Well, I will see you in the neighborhood.
Awesome. Thank you. We've been talking with Annie Howard. Annie, thank you so much for being with us on The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always such an honor.
Great. We look forward to all these happy heads around Park City and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here at KPCW Park City. If you didn't catch the entire conversation, you'd like to go back, just look us up at, well, wherever you get your podcasts, and it's KPCW The Mountain Life, or find us online at kpcw.org under the shows tab.